Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 14th chapter, verses 30 to 61. As Pitika Devi, after receiving the salmon for Shiva from Agni, conceived a child named Skanda, Kartikeya. Pritajyoti, having received salmon from Chitraketu, became pregnant after eating remnants of food from the yogi performed by Angira. So what do you remember from Bhurijan Prabhu's class yesterday? Sankirtan remembers. There was a what? Oh, Rupa Shiksha, that's it. From Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Oh, yes, rarity. Muktanam api sitam. Rarity of devotional service. Yes. Yes?
Chitraketu Maharaj, he heard from Angira Muni about his prediction that his son will bring Harsha and Shoka.
Harsha and Shoka, his son.
But since he was too much attached to have son, he thought maybe Shoka will be just a few bit, not a vision. And he didn't take it seriously. He was just very happy.
He didn't take it seriously that his son will be Harsha Shoka. He thought, okay, maybe a little disobedient. That's all right. We can tolerate that. But at least we'll have a son. Hare Prish?
Sometimes even if one performs one's duty, there are still reactions.
Sometimes even if one performs one's duty, there are still reactions. Okay, you learned that in Virjan's class? Or in? Okay. Who got the reactions? Everybody. Okay. Even he was doing his duty, he was getting reactions. So, Maharaj Parikshit, after hearing about the amazing Leela of Vritrasura, he's very curious how such a great devotee could take birth as a demon. And actually, Haribo, Shrimati has appeared. He was curious how such a demon like Vritrasura could show such devotional qualities and preach pure devotional service. So this question could also relate to us, that how could such people become devotees who had no idea of Krishna, who were doing so many other things, breaking the regular principles. How could we become devotees? So first of all, I was thinking, well, what are the demoniac qualities? Who knows? Adi Purush? Yeah?
Pride, ostentation.
Dhamba. Yes, what else are such?
Those who are influenced by Raja and Tamaguna.
Raja and Tamaguna. They have. Yes? Dhambo, Dako, Bhimanascha. Is that what you were? Krodha, Parisha, Mevacha. So these are the demoniac qualities. Anything else? Kam, Krod, Lobh, Moha, Madan, Matsarya. So that's what we had before. And Srila Prabhupada came to America and he found that people were preaching, God is dead, you are God, everyone is God, science is supreme. So that's what Srila Prabhupada faced when he arrived in America. And after being there for 1 year, then the newspaper reported, God lives. And Swamiji has brought God to life, Swamiji. So God lives. So this was the preaching of Srila Prabhupada. So now, demoniac qualities. Of course, he was a demon, but he still believed in God. Actually, he had more faith than Indra. So he was more of a devotee than Indra was. So it was a bit complex, the situation. So that's why Maharaj Pariksit was wondering, how come such a great devotee could take birth as a demon? So these chapters 14 to 17 will answer this question. And to find out the answer, we have to go back to Vritrasura's last life, Chitraketu. He was a great king who had everything, but only one thing was missing. That was a son. He married 10 million times. Just imagine, 10 million wives. But not one of them could give him a son. That was his fate. However, when Angira Muni came, he could override his karma. He went beyond his karma, he gave him a son. He wasn't supposed to get a son. But he gave him a son, Harshashoka. Mixed happiness and lamentation. And Chitraketu didn't mind. Better a blind uncle than no uncle. That's what Srila Prabhupada says. But he did not realize one thing about his son. What was that one thing? Does anybody know? It's going to be in the future chapters. I think in chapter 15. There's something about his son. I think it's chapter 15. Yes. He was his enemy in his previous life. And he came just to give him misery. So that's what he didn't realize. So now we'll see how he's going to behave toward his son. Not knowing, actually, what is in store for him. Verse 31. After receiving semen from Maharaj Chitraketu, King of Surasena, Queen Prithaduti gradually developed in her pregnancy of King Pariksit, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. So Surasena, this place, where is Surasena? Is that Mathura? I was wondering. King Surasena, the province of Surasena. Yes?
Is Shaurasena Hirikari's...
Oh, Shauras.
Yes.
That means Shaurastra.
Shaurasena is the king. So the Shaurasena is the Hirikari king.
Yeah, which...
comprised of... The capital is Mathura, but it is much bigger than...
Oh, so the capital is Mathura, yeah. But it's a big, big area. Shaurasena. Okay. And so verse 32. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Surasena were extremely pleased. King Chitraketu was especially pleased. After purifying himself by bathing and decorating himself with ornaments, he engaged learned Brahmins in offering benedictions to the child and performing birth ceremony. 34. Unto the Brahmins who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity of gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows, 600 million cows. So 10 million wives and 600 million cows. Yes, this was quite an amazing number. As a cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, the beneficent King Chitraketu, to increase the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirable things to everyone. So he wanted to increase the longevity, but somehow it didn't work. Again, it's not to be. He did all these things in charity, but his son will not live long. 36. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, his affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when King Chitraketu, after great difficulty, received a son, his affection for the son increased day after day. So later on in chapter 15, again, this analogy about money is going to be repeated in preaching. Angira is preaching to Chitraketu that it's just like money changes hands. So you don't become attached when it goes from an enemy's hand and then it comes to your hands. It's just the money. So verse 37, the mother's attraction and attention to the son, like that of the child's father, excessively increased. The other wives, seeing Prithaduti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with a desire to have sons. As King Chitraketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Prithaduti increased. But gradually he lost affection for the other wives who had no sons. The other queens were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence toward them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamented. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives, exactly like a maidservant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Purport stated by Chanaka Pandit. A person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. For such a person, living at home and living in the forest are equal. So in the days of the Varnashram, it was a big thing to go to the forest. It was like really heavy. You leave your comfortable home, and you go to the forest and live with the jungle animals, and you just eat fruits and roots. But if you're living at home and your wife does not speak sweetly, it's just as bad as living in the forest. So might as well go to the forest. Similarly, for a woman who has no son, who is not cared for by her husband, and whose co-wives neglect her, treating her like a maidservant, to go to the forest is better than to remain at home. So even the women should go to the forest if their home is not good. As the men should do, so the women should do. Verse 41. Even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant, therefore we are most unfortunate. They want to be master of the master, not servant of the servant. 42. Shishukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Kritaduti's opulence in possessing a son, Kritaduti's co-wives always burned in envy, which became extremely strong. So at this point, Virja Prabhu asks a question. It's a very subtle question. He asked, what's the difference between jealousy and envy? Jealousy, and those who have English second language might be a problem to understand this. Jealousy and envy. Yes, you have English first. What's the difference?
Envy is more developed and malicious.
Yes, yes. Envy is more malicious. Yeah, anything else? Hare Krishna. Yes, yes. If you're jealous, that you can reconcile if the object changes its behavior or if the object changes hands that you're jealous of.
If you're envious, no matter what the person does.
Yeah. If you're envious, no matter what the person does, you're still envious. Yes?
Yeah, any person, he likes possessions of another person who needs envy.
Yes.
But jealousy is attached to the person.
Yes, opposite.
But the person doesn't pay attention to him, attached to someone else.
Okay, well,
different focus.
Virja and Prabhu says jealousy means you want what someone else has, and envy is more developed and you want to harm the person. You want to do something against him. Envious. Envy. So envy is something really strong. Pache.
I think Prabhupada also gave an example.
Yes.
Snake and
yes, the snake and the envious person. Right, right. Yeah, a snake bites only once, but an envious person bites all the time. So an envious person is worse than a snake. And Prabhupada also said that a snake can be charmed by mantras, but an envious person cannot be charmed at all. He cannot change. And actually, envy is one of the things in the heart, krida, weakness of heart. Weakness of heart. One of the big anarthas in the heart is envy. So, yes?
People are envious of the cow.
People are envious of the cow, obviously. They're envious of the cow, yes. They're, of course they're envious. They're giving so much trouble to the cow. Yes, they eat, take the life, vanamali.
And Prabhupada prayed for society, society in general, non-envious.
Yes, the society of Krishna conscious for non-envious persons. What else is for the non-envious? Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, nirmatsaranam satam. That is, Bhagavatam is for nirmatsaranam, those who are not envious. So Srila Prabhupada, he said about jealousy. Jealousy means you are the rightful owner of something and I won't allow you to take it. That's jealousy. Suppose you own something and I'm saying, no, you don't own it. I will own it. It's mine. So I will not allow you to have it. So this is jealousy, Prabhupada says. So what are some examples of envy in this world or in the Shastra? Yes.
Two friends meeting after a while and talk about the third one. And they say, oh, you here?
Yes. The story Srila Prabhupada tells, two friends meet and one tells the other friend, did you hear? Mr. Agarwal has become high court judge.
And then one of them says, I don't think so. No, no, it's true, it's true.
So the other one says, no, I don't think so. He says, no, it's true. So he said, yes, probably he doesn't get any salary. And there's actually a thing in logic that demonstrates. One of the, you know what that is, Adipurush? The logic, I can't remember the Sanskrit. Is that a mother, because she was naked at birth, she should be naked now or something. Nagna Matrika Nyaya. Nagna Matrika Nyaya. So that was the logic of that envy. Okay? Prabhupada says that Grihamedis are envious. They're envious of others. Medhi. And the word medhi also means jealousy. The word medhi. Griha, medhi. Medhi means jealousy, Prabhupada says. So they're interested only in their own family, so they're envious of the other families. They fight. Or community, or society, or nation, like that. So Prabhupada says, in the age of Kali, all householders are jealous of one another because they're blind of the knowledge of ultimate truth. Any other examples? Yes?
Gandhari.
Who?
Gandhari.
Gandhari?
Yeah.
She was envious?
Envious.
Oh yeah, of Kunti, when Kunti gave birth to
Yudhishthira.
So then she was pregnant, Gandhari, and then she smacked her abdomen and then a lump came out. But then Vyasadeva fixed it up. He divided it into 100, put it into pots, and she got 100 sons. Yeah, she was lucky. Vyasadeva was there. So, yes, another one was Duryodhan. He was envious against the Pandavas. So this is Matsarata. So ultimately, who is the person whom everyone is envious of? Krishna. Yes. Why should he be God? Why not me? Why should I serve him? He should serve me. And he is serving you. He's giving you everything. But we don't appreciate. So Prabhupada says everyone in the material world is enemy of Krishna because they want to be competitor of Krishna. Everyone's envious of Krishna. And then he makes another point in teachings of Queen Kunti lecture of number 6. He says, if you're jealous and envious, then you are within the material world. And if you're not envious, you're in the spiritual world. That's how you can tell. You can test yourself. If you're envious of your friends or associates, then that means you're in the material world. And if you're not envious, you're in the spiritual world. So there's no doubt whether you're spiritually advanced or not. And that is, I think that is also stated somewhere in some familiar scripture about non-envy being a very high standard of devotional service. Vaikuntha
consciousness.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a book, a Nectar of Instruction, isn't it?
Text 5.
Yes. One who does not find faults in others, he's at the highest devotee. Yes. Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani. Oh, I don't know that one. Where is that from? Oh, Isho. Okay, no wonder.
So it says there that one who sees all jivas as spiritual sparks of the Supreme, see, is a true lover of things, how can there be illusion of all anxiety?
Okay, one who sees all living entities as sparks of the Lord, is not an illusion. How can there be illusion for him? He sees everyone equally. Yes?
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Is it right that their envy was born from the cause of their envy was that they couldn't fulfill their desires? They didn't have sons. And they saw someone who could fulfill one desire.
Yes.
So in this way they were kind of disturbed and envy took place.
So what is your question?
What is the root of envy?
What is the root of envy? Okay, what is the root of envy? Yes.
It's connected with being disconnected from Krishna.
Okay, it's has something to do with being disconnected from Krishna. Yeah, that's everything in this world has something to do with being disconnected with Krishna.
So we feel incomplete.
Yeah, we see others, they have it, we don't. We think it's not fair, we become envious. So it's incompleteness. Right. So we think the way to be happy is to get the things, the energy of Krishna, rather than Krishna. And they're enjoying, they're happy, and we're miserable. So. What? The karmis are envious of the devotees. There will be a time. Karmis will be envious of devotees taking bath regularly. Actually, when Prabhupada, when they got the temple in Los Angeles, and the neighbors were envious, and Prabhupada said, well, because they see the devotees, they don't work. But they get this nice big building, and they have cars, and so many things. So Srila Prabhupada said, ask them, why don't they join us? They also can not work and get the things. That was his answer. People got envious of the devotees. Okay, so the root is our separation and our feeling of incompleteness being away from Krishna. And people who are envious think that you need something of this world to fill up that emptiness. They actually, the only way to fill it up is to be connected with Krishna. That's a nice answer. Does anybody have anything else to add? Or anything on this? The root cause of envy. I have another question. What does envy do to a person? Makes him?
Miserable.
Makes him burn. Yes. Burns. Burns the heart. And we'll see in verse 43 what happened to these ladies. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence. Being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. So that was what happens when you become envious, that you do, you murder, you even kill children, lost their intelligence. So verse, we know in Bhagavad Gita 14th chapter, when there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. So an increase in envy. Verse 44, unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Queen Kritaduti walked within the house, thinking her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand that he was dead. Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritaduti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, please bring my son here." When the maidservant approached the child, who was lying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upward. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. Just imagine if you're the maidservant and you go, and your duty is take care of the child, and then you see the child's dead, what are they going to think? That if you're the one that gives the news, they might suspect you that you did it. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. So before we read the next verses, I'd like to read you something about grief. And I put it up here on the board here. These are the stages, 8 stages of grief. Where I got this from was after the passing away of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. they had a seminar in, I guess, in Gitanagari, led by Vajralila Prabhu, and she gave a class discussing responding to a seminar on the grieving process entitled Grief and Loss. So many devotees came, and the mood was solemn, reflective, and united. And one Chintamani Prabhu started discussing the nature, and she pointed out that often as devotees pursue transcending their material body and mind, they overlook the need to spiritualize them. That was a very interesting statement. We want to transcend, but we don't want to spiritualize. And something like grief can be neglected or even repressed, lest one give in to the lower nature. So then, see, these people, a lot of them, they're like psychologists and all these kind of people, so they know what happens if you don't actually grieve for somebody when you lose. So they're discussing, they went into all this discussion and how they were feeling. We won't get into that, but just this introduction. So then she says, unfortunately, such neglect only complicates one's grief as it remains lodged in the mind, distracting the devotees from development of higher consciousness. So to understand, acknowledge, and process grief is something devotees in particular should be sensitive to. So I just took one thing from the seminar, that was the 8 stages of grief, because I found as I was reading the next verses that the queen goes through some of these stages, though maybe not in the same order. And so the 8 stages are shock. That's the first stage, shock, when somebody passes away, your close person to you. Then the second is denial. You think, no, it didn't happen, it can't happen. It's not really. And you start talking to the body and you start saying things, so she'll be doing that as well. Anger. Why did this happen? It shouldn't have happened. And guilt. Oh, I should have been nicer to this person. Fear. What's going to happen to me without him or her? Pain and sorrow. Then finally, these are all the negative. Then 7 is acceptance. And 8 is returning to pursuits of love. So this is actually taken from one of Bhakti Tirthamaraj's books, Spiritual Warrior 4, page 130. You want a full explanation of it. So I just took a little bit from the seminar which they gave. So verse 48. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground unconscious. So which level of grief is that? Shock. She's in shock, I would say. She fell to the ground. O King Pariksit, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally aggrieved, they also began to cry. The queens who administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. Verse 51 and 50. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Just imagine. So if you have so much attachment for someone or something, and this happens, you get unconscious when you lose it, you get blind, or maybe not physically blind, but blind in some way. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire. And as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling on the ground. He's a king. And now he can't even walk after losing his son. But you can understand that, actually. If you're a parent, you can understand this feeling. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and the learned Brahmins present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. So which level of grief is that? Devastation. Shock. Shock. You could even add devastation or something. For unconsciousness. Blindness. What happens when you... It's just quite amazing. Verse 52. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu, merged in great lamentation and saw the dead child who was the only son in the family, she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain in the cores of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers, and all the Brahmins. So what level of grief is this?
Sorrow.
Sorrow, yeah, I would say pain and sorrow. Pain and sorrow. Sixth level here. Verse 53. The garland of flowers decorating the queen's head fell, and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted chlorine on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a karari bird. So again, pain and sorrow. Now 54 is going to be a different one. Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation. For during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful. So which one?
Anger.
Now she's getting angry. You have to blame somebody. And so she's blaming the Creator. He's not following his laws. Why do bad things happen to good people? God's law is unjust. So why doesn't God follow his own laws? That's the question. Any answers? Why doesn't he follow his laws? Son should live, father should die first, then son should die. Okay, what was that, Brisimnanda?
There is no such law.
Okay, Arundhapuri.
He sets up the rules, but he himself is not entangled in the rules.
Okay, he may make the rules, but he doesn't have to follow them, because he's God. Patri. He's not partial. Yes, they're just getting your own fruits. He's not to blame. Yes?
Living entity doesn't perform properly his
duties. Okay, if the living entity doesn't do his duties properly, he can forget his rights. Did you have something more, Patri, to add?
Regarding the question, why bad things happen to good people?
Why bad things happen to good people? Farmers putting seeds in the field.
And the seeds like
surplus. Very bad seeds.
Okay.
They were filling up a container half to protect it from rats. So rains came and he filled up the container on top of that. First class grain came.
But when there's fall underneath, so these people, they're opening and taking grains and close again.
Okay, there's a hole underneath, so they take the grains up from the hole and then close it.
What is this?
So the child saw the father is putting first class grains on top. Well, when he opens it from the bottom, the third class grains are coming. So what is this?
It illustrates that unless this is third class grains, will never finish. First class grains will never come.
So unless the third class grains finish, the first class grains will never come. Okay, you have your karma. So it may be in that way. I don't know exactly. Anyway, Lidushupa. Okay, so people out of ignorance, they don't know that reactions are due to their karma, and they are responsible, they make their karma, so they're responsible for their happiness and distress. Okay, yes?
Katara
Magyam. Vidya Katara Magyam. So Krishna says in Gita, he is a doer and an undoer simultaneously. Yes. So, in the purport, Prabhupada says, this is the way a conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator when he meets reverses. Why did you do this to me? Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked because some people are happy and some are not. Here the Queen blames Supreme Providence for her son's death. What are some other accusations against God? What do people, yeah. World War II. Yes. So the German ladies, they all became atheists because their husbands didn't come back from war, or their sons, or their brothers, or their fathers. Okay, so these are accusations. What are some other accusations against God? Yes.
I hear many times Indian people complain that they go
Indian people.
To the temple, pray, and nothing happens.
Indian people say they go to the temple and pray and nothing happens. What do they expect? Some miracle, huh? They want something material. Yes.
Devotees, even they were not affected by like affected by there was like some devotees in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they lost their son still.
Yes, yes. Who was that? Shivas.
Shivas
lost his son,
and
but he was not affected.
Blessing to one.
Oh. Nityananda gave a blessing to someone that your son will die, and the person took it, yes. What was the first example? Oh, it was Shivas. It was kirtan was going on in his house. And during the kirtan, his son died. And all the ladies started crying, and Shiva said, stop it. Don't disturb Mahaprabhu's kirtan. But then Mahaprabhu, he knew because he was omniscient. And so he he brought the son back to life. Okay? So then, Prabhupada, I have a little quote from Science of Self-Realization. Prabhupada says, when there is a scarcity in production or disturbances caused by providence, the poor plan-making politician blames it on cruel nature, but carefully avoids studying how and by whom the laws of nature are controlled. And they may blame it on nature also. So purport, following the creative laws, a father should die first, and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of providence, then providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the created being. So there was one cartoon in a newspaper. It had God sitting at a computer, and there was some guy down on earth, and there was a huge like rain cloud with a thunderbolt coming out on the guy. And God was pushing the button and laughing. That was their idea. So he was laughing. He was pushing the button. The thunderbolt was coming on the head of the guy. So Prabhupada says, this is how people think. But actually it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. So what does an inexperienced mean? What does it mean that the conditioned soul is inexperienced? Shri Sevananda. Yes, he doesn't understand the subtle laws of karma. What else doesn't he understand? There's one big thing that the conditioned soul, Mahapuri.
He doesn't understand that he's fully controlled.
He doesn't understand he's fully controlled? Yes, Abhay?
He doesn't understand his situation, he doesn't realize he's a spirit soul.
He doesn't realize his spirit soul? That's good. And he's working on the bodily platform. Yes, such. He doesn't understand every action gets a reaction. Another thing I got was he doesn't understand the purpose of creation. That he's supposed to get detached and go back to Godhead. And so therefore he blames God for not giving him his sense gratification and interrupting it. Purport. Also what you said. The subtle laws, he does not know how. The subtle laws of fruitive activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the mood of the karmi. What is the mood of the devotee when something happens?
Tolerate.
Tolerate. Yes.
Obeisances.
Vidvag vakorbir. Yes. Tate nukampam susamikshamano sankirtan. Yes, so the difference between devotee and demon is devotee always knows nothing happens independently of the will of the Lord. The Namali?
Devotees think, like, I'm supposed to get more by the mercy of God.
Yeah, so the devotee thinks, oh, I'm just getting a token. I deserve much more bad things to happen, but I'm just getting a little bit. What a mentality. Yes?
Wait, Kunti won't come then, because next is for another Krishna.
What's that? Oh, Kunti?
Yes, she
welcomes all these calamities because it helps her remember Krishna. So you can't, Brijan Prabhu says, you can't blame anyone else for your karma except you. It's your karma. Who else accused Providence of being unjust? In our... Somebody accused Providence, yes.
All the parents of devotees.
The parents of devotees, uh-huh.
Gopis.
The gopis, yes. The gopis also. He said, you arranged to give us Krishna and then you take him away? And so we're becoming blind because we can't see him? They also became blind?
And also they are criticizing the creator.
Yeah, and they're criticizing the creator for making eyelids that blink. And then they can't see Krishna. And so these are the criticisms. Yes, I think they're working on the electricity, right? And so we're having an interesting light show today. Can't depend on anything in this world. Okay? So, verse 55. My Lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and a son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruitive activity. However, if fruitive activity is so strong that birth and death depend on it, there is no need of a controller or God. So what is philosophy is that? It's a philosophy. Huh? Yes, Karma Mimamsa philosophy. And what is this mood here? Now, what is her mood? Anger. Yeah, she's still angry here. Angry at God. Now, we don't need a God if it's just according to karma. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruit of action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. So this is happening in Kali Yuga, that the bonds of affection are disturbed in Kali Yuga. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent. So, she's really angry here with who? I don't know. God? Providence? Yes, God. She's angry with the Supreme Person. She's angry with him. Are her arguments logical? Logical arguments here? Or just emotion? It's based...
Huh?
You think the first one might be?
At first sight.
At first sight.
But if you enter experience, it doesn't hold.
No. It's not logical. She's not speaking. She's just saying things, out of anger.
Just like...
No, there is no God. We don't need God. The laws are not there. They're not working. So there must be no God.
It's really the same situation as Maharaj Rahugana.
Rahugana.
He was putting up all these arguments.
Not sure.
The soul is not... How do you say the soul can be fatigued? The soul is fatigued because...
The soul is fatigued, yes.
And his arguments are really...
They sound like good arguments, but actually... they're not. Yes. So she's speaking very emotionally now, and you can't expect her to speak very logically. Yes?
In her situation, perhaps the energy is suffering.
She's suffering, yeah. So she can't see beyond her suffering, so naturally that's how she's reacting. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, stated in Brahma Samhita, one who has taken to Krishna consciousness devotional service is not affected by the results of karma. In this verse, karma has been stressed on the basis of Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which says one must act according to his karma, and that a supreme controller must give the results of karma. So what's wrong with this philosophy? That you act according to your karma, and then there's a God, and he has to give you the results. Yes.
It implies that karma is supreme.
They think karma is supreme.
It leaves no room for God's intervention.
Yes.
And God's kripa.
Good.
So
there's no room for the mercy, just like Prabhupada said the first sentence, that actually devotees can get, there is a way out. So they think that rebirth is endless. The Karma Mimamsa philosophers, they think karma is the only thing, the best thing you can do is go to the higher planets. That's the best thing you can do. So keep trying, go up there, come back, keep trying, go up, come back. So that's, they think that you go, birth and death is endless and there's no way out. So this is the flaw. They don't understand there's a way out. And what's the way out? Sarvadharma Pritaja. You please the lawmaker and he sets you free. So that's the way out of the material world. So in the, if you look in the reference, 10th canto, 87th chapter, verse 25, which has all the six darshans. We have the Karma Mimamsa by Jamini Rishi. And he says material work and its results are the whole of reality. He teaches material existence is endless, no liberation. Cycle of karma is perpetual. The best one can aim for is higher birth among the demigods. So they say the whole purpose of the Vedas is to engage human beings in rituals for creating good karma. So karma kanda. Consequently, the mature soul's prime responsibility is to ascertain the exact meaning of the Vedas' sacrificial injunctions and execute them. Duty is that which is indicated by injunctions of the Vedas. So, but this is refuted in Vedanta Sutra, quoted in this purport, especially in the fourth chapter, which deals with life's ultimate goal, describes the soul's potential for achieving liberation from birth and death, and subordinates ritual sacrifice to the role of helping one become qualified to receive spiritual knowledge. So the only use of these rituals is to help one become qualified to achieve spiritual knowledge. So then it says in the Vedanta Sutra, Agnihotra, other sacrifices are meant only for producing knowledge, as the statements of the Vedas show, and the very last words of Vedanta Sutra proclaim Anavriti Shabda. The liberated soul never returns to this world as promised by the revealed scripture. So this is the, in a nutshell, the flaws of the Karma Mimamsa philosophy and the karma, what is the Karma Mimamsa philosophy in Canto 10, 87th chapter, verse 25. So back to the purport. In the purport, the subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the Supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, Krishna says that one who can understand him, how he is acting, controlling everything by subtle laws, immediately becomes freed by his grace. Which verse is that? From Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma chamedivyam evam yogvedita tataha. That is a statement of Brahma Samhita. One should take to devotional service without reservations and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord. That will make one happy in this life and the next. So these karmic laws are very difficult to understand. Non-devotees can't understand at all. So final understanding is to surrender to Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada says. And the devotee, when he's in a difficult place, he sees this as Krishna's mercy. Not only he sees Krishna's mercy, he sees Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. We'll hear this later on in chapter 17. Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. So what mood must we have so that we will prevent ourselves from accusing, having accusing? There's two mentalities. There's the accusing mentality, you blame someone else when something happens. Or else there's the victim mentality. Again, you blame something else because something happened. So how do we avoid that? Yes?
One is Adi Purush Govindi.
Adi Purush said?
Given class, you know, power the class. So we should take responsibility on our own.
We should take responsibility on our own. What did you say? Where did he go? Oh, he's disappeared. When he comes back, we'll ask him what he said. Yes? What's that?
The attitude of Maltaya.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Maltaya, what are you saying? You know those women, Maltaya? Maltaya.
I didn't get it.
In the Roman Empire, those.
In the?
Roman Empire.
Roman Empire.
They sacrificed themselves by throwing themselves to the lion.
Who did that? I know, I didn't know that. I don't know much history, or else I forgot it. I forgot whatever I learned. Oh, the Christians.
They would sacrifice themselves.
Oh, they didn't voluntarily go there.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
So there's a philosophy called Nartaya. It's English word that I don't pronounce.
Okay.
And they you know, they want to come.
We don't understand what he's saying.
Nartaya is called in English. Just listen and
Okay.
It's quite simple to understand.
Okay.
And they sacrifice themselves.
They sacrifice themselves.
And by sacrificing themselves, they want to become glorious.
So they want to become glorious by sacrificing themselves. Acha.
Here we have the person speaking.
What is it?
Martyr.
Oh, martyr.
Martyr.
It's something like Mahatire. Martyr. M-A-R-T-Y-R. Martyr. I think Mahatire.
Okay.
Martyr, martyr.
It's
yes. Martyr.
They want to become glorious by.
Well, that's one way not to have, to avoid the, but I don't think we want to do that. To accuse, to avoid the accusing mentality or the victim mentality. Well, that is the victim mentality, being a martyr,
yeah.
In a sense.
Suicide bombers.
Yeah, I was, as soon as you said that, I thought of the suicide bombers. Suicide bombers. So who killed that Gandhi, when Gandhi was killed by. Rajiv was killed by suicide bomber. Yes, you have something? Okay, let's finish this topic first. Anything else on how to avoid the accusing mentality or victim mentality? Be a victim. Yes?
The person who's the accusing mentality, he strongly believes that everyone has some debts to him.
Okay, the person who is of the accusing mentality,
yeah,
believes that everyone owes something to him.
Yeah.
He everyone owes something to him, yes.
But,
yeah, so no one owes anything to us because that's the nature. So what is the mentality that is the opposite of that? No one owes anything. How do you feel? I have it living in India. Yes. I'm not the center. What I had was, I don't expect anything from anyone. You don't expect anything.
That's
if you expect something, then you're in trouble. Of course, if you're a manager, you have to expect something. But you know, you try your best to do what you have to do, and you depend on people, but actually, I don't expect. Yeah. Nothing belongs to me, yes. Nothing belongs to me. Actually, someone gave a class. It was Russian sannyasi. Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj. And he was lecturing on Trinadapi Suni Chena. And one of the qualities of Trinadapi Suni Chena, or chanting the holy name nicely, is that you don't expect anything from anyone. Actually, that's one of the Amanina, Manadena, Amanina. Don't expect respect. He said you don't expect anything from anyone. Brahma Buddha Prasanatma, yes. Nashashti, Nakanshti, Nidashuka.
I was just thinking about the previous chapters, the past,
which are sure is pastime.
One of the parts of Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the hurricane.
He gave the example of?
The hurricane.
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 Okay, material world is like a hurricane, and the Krishna conscious person remains undisturbed in the hurricane.
You mean that seems like the opposite of this accusing mentality.
So this is the opposite of the accusing mentality, to remain undisturbed in the hurricane of the material world. That's good. Anything else on this? Okay, your question? How do we? Are we counteracting her statements? Right, so how do you counteract that? Everyone lives and dies according. Of course, we don't have an argument with that. But when she says that you don't need a god, then we have an argument. So what is the use of a god? It's only our own activities. We do something, we get the reaction. It's don't need a god. So how do you counteract that argument? That it's just our karma, don't need God to give it to us? Okay. You can't, it's not, no use to get in and defeat her arguments. Just have to let her get it out of her system, as we say. Let her get it out of her system. She's not speaking logically, and she's in that accusing mentality. Angry. She's angry. And you can't reason with somebody who's angry like that. And you lost her son. And what are you going to say to give her back her son?
In Mauritius,
oh.
You know, he just joined the race.
Joined the race.
Brand new BMW.
With a car.
And he missed one curb. And there was four guys in the car. And the car topped over. And they removed all the bodies. They were not killed. But he was the last person, and he had his belt on. But when they wanted to pull out that body, the car blazed itself.
It set on fire.
Yeah.
Wow.
So now I'm the one who has to tell the parents.
My God.
That your son just died, and he just came that weekend from the UK.
So Madhavendrapuri, so he was in the temple?
He was a friend of Krishna.
Oh, friend of
outside.
Krishna living outside.
Just came back from UK.
And he just came back from UK, and he decided he was going to enter this race.
And his father gave him a brand new BMW.
And his father gave him a brand new BMW, and he died immediately in the race.
So
you had to go tell the father that your son has died.
You know, the program was there and told me.
So what was he like?
Because
he was here.
What happened is that son came back. All the father couldn't even connect. He was still waiting, he was at the door all night. He's coming, I know he's coming.
He was still thinking he's at the door, he's in denial.
Yeah,
he was thinking he's coming, he's going to come any minute.
All night.
Yeah.
And he's at the door, and I'm telling him, I think he's dead.
And you're telling him, I think he's dead. He said, no, he's coming.
And when I saw it, all the tap water of the house turned open.
And all the taps turned open.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. The ghost came.
The ghost came.
And since it burned,
he wanted water.
He wanted water, so I was telling
the
parents,
he burnt in the car accident, so he wanted water.
He
came to the house.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And he turned on all the taps to cool himself off from the fire. And you were trying to console the father, and the father was saying, no, he's coming. Denial.
By the end of the night, I started to the whole thing. They started to become receptive.
So then by the end, they became receptive. And so they went through these stages here. They went through all the stages. Anger, guilt, fear, pain, sorrow, acceptance is number 7. So it's at the end. The two good things come at the end. Well, returning to pursuit.
I was just consoling them, going from one to the other, giving prasad and not everything, other thing. Only after they couldn't even listen.
Yeah, there was one devotee mother. She lost her son. She had 2 sons and 2 daughters, and one of the sons died. He was with his girlfriend. He was about 17, I think. And they were walking down the train tracks. So a train came, and he pushed her out of the way, and he got run over. So then he died. So the mother, for 3 months, she was just sitting. She couldn't do anything. Couldn't cook, couldn't do anything, just sit like a stone, you know, it's very difficult to accept. And I met her, it was like 3 years later she came to Vrindavan, and she was still grieving, still going through it. Very, very, it's such a strong attachment, mother and son. So anyway, so we're young, I mean, not all of us, but most of us. Perhaps you have not gone through this, that you've lost somebody very dear to you, but people will have to console people, as he says. We'll have to preach to people about this and try to alleviate their grief. So when you're preaching, you have to expect that these are the stages that these people are going to be going through, and these are the stages that you will go through if you lose something like that, lose somebody who's very dear to you. Verse 56, my dear son, I am helpless. You're very much aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Just look at your lamenting father. We are helpless because without a son, we shall have to suffer the distress of going to the darkest hellish regions. You are the only hope by which we can get out of these dark regions. Therefore, I request you not to go any further with the merciless Yama. So now, what stage, yes?
There's not even a word about his benefit.
She's not worried about the kid's benefit. She's just thinking about herself, very self-centered.
No denial.
Denial, yeah, I would say denial. That she's talking to him like he's still there and it's possible he can come back and, you know, be what she wants him to be. Because all the parents, they have a program or plan for their children. So she has a plan that you're going to do, you know, you'll grow up and then you'll do our Shraddh ceremony and then we will have this. It'll be very nice. And because that's the whole purpose in the Vedic culture, to have a son is so he can do the Shraddh ceremony for the father. And there's stories in Mahabharata that once, you know, a sage didn't have a son and then his descendants were all hanging on a string and I don't remember the whole story. I think it was Jagatkaru. Anyway, so he had to go and get married and have a son before he died, although he was a brahmachari. Anyway, so but that's the Vedic culture, that you must have a son so the son can do the Shraddh ceremony. So she, not only denial was there, she's talking to him, now don't leave me, look at your father. Now he's a dead body, but she's saying, look at your father, look how he's crying. And you're our only hope. She's actually thinking, she's talking to him like he's right there. So she's not speaking logically, speaking to a dead body. Just like Madhavendra gave the example of the father who thought the son was going to come in the door any moment. Whole night. Although the son was already dead, he thought the son is going to come in the door any moment. Yes? Oh yeah, one devotee died in the Russian, Russian devotee died in Mayapur festival. He jumped in the Ganga.
Day before Gaur Purnima.
Day before Gaur Purnima.
And I had to take.
He jumped into water that was very shallow, and he broke his neck. Right.
Yeah.
And then the devotee who was with him,
yes,
in Ganga, he came and I was the only one whom he knew.
So his friend came to you.
Yeah, he asked me if I can take him to the managers or to find everyone to inform so that he'll be kind of everything will be taken care of by management of festival.
Uh-huh.
So first we went to pick up.
So you went to the managers. You had to help him go to the managers.
Yeah, I took the devotee to the first to the temple president.
Temple president
of that devotee who just died.
Of the devotee who died.
So we found him putting tilak in the heart after taking bath after.
So he was in his hut putting tilak on after taking bath?
And we came and we said, you know, just now you're one of your devotees from your team, they were traveling in India. He just died in the Ganga. So we need his passport, we need everything, we have to show.
So you told him, okay, your devotee of your team just died in the Ganga and we need his passport and this and that.
And for a few minutes, he couldn't understand.
He couldn't understand for a few minutes.
He was saying, what?
What?
Who said?
Who said?
And the devotee said, just in front of me, I saw. And he was keep putting tilak.
So he kept putting his tilak on.
Yeah, and we told him, we need his passport. And
so we need his passport.
I can't touch his luggage without him.
He said, well, I can't touch his luggage without him.
And then we told him, he's there in a medic room.
He's there in the medical
next to the gate,
place,
yeah.
Next to the gate.
And
so he said, well, how is he?
And because I was actually calm because I was not in a situation. So I was not attached.
So you were calm, so you weren't attached, so you could be calm.
But I could see those who knew it, they knew each other, how the actually core consciousness couldn't feed.
So, yeah, so you saw how the reaction of the people who were attached.
Like
he couldn't.
Dream.
It's like a dream. He couldn't understand. He couldn't accept it. Daniel.
And I told him that you are the one who traveled with him for a few months. You have to be there. You have to go to maybe Vishnagar and you have to go to embassy to get permission for cremation. And he couldn't actually understand anything. He was just like...
And he said, you have to go get permission for cremation. I mean, yeah, like just probably a few minutes ago he was there talking to him and then all of a sudden he's dead.
It's very difficult to accept the end.
Yeah, it's very difficult to accept it. Somebody, you know, he's here just a day ago and then he's dead. Yeah. Well, so back to verse 56. She's talking about the Shraddh ceremony. And she wants him not to go, don't go anymore with the merciless Yamaraj. So we'll talk a little bit about this Shraddh ceremony. Brijam Prabhu has an example of one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples wanted to do the Shraddh ceremony for his departed father. And Shri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was displeased because it showed a lack of trust in Krishna. So Brijam says that we don't have, the Vaishnavas don't have to do it. A non-Krishna conscious Shraddh ceremony can do a shortened version, but not the full program. So in Gita there is a verse, first chapter, verse 41. Sankarana kaya ida kulaknanam kulasya cha patanti pitaro yesham luptopin datakakya. An increase of Mamanta population certainly causes hellish life both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. So Prabhupada says that this, you offer the food to Vishnu, because if you offer the Vishnu's remnants to your forefathers, then they get freed from all their sinful reactions. So when I was a pujari in Calcutta, we had one cook, Shantilal. He, Gargamuni, found this Marwari cook. And his habit was to take out a little bit of the food and offer it to his forefathers every time when he would cook. He was a cook. So Prabhupada says sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various types of sinful reactions. Sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in subtle bodies as ghosts. One time one psychic came to me and said, did anybody in your family die? I said, yeah, my brother died. She said, he's suffering and you have to do something. Really? Yeah, he was an alcoholic and he died. When he stopped, he decided, okay, I won't drink anymore, and then he died because he tried to stop drinking. So anyway, so these things happen. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition. Those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. Another thing that happened here in Vrindavan, some devotee had a dream of John Lennon, and John Lennon came to the devotee and said, please, I'm in a ghost body, can you do something for me? So they had a feast for all the devotees in Vrindavan temple in memory of John Lennon. I think so, Prithu it was. Okay, Prithu arranged it. It was many years ago. But he was begging the devotees, please help me, I'm in a ghost body. But Prabhupada says, one who is engaged in devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Here we got it. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So our Sarup Damodar was faced with a decision to perform or go to his mother's Shraddh ceremony or continue with his devotional service. In the spring of 1970, he received a telegram. Your mother expired March 24th, Shraddh, April 6th. So he was very sad. He was planning to return to Manipur for the Shraddh ceremony when a letter came from his uncle, Sri Kirani. And the letter instructed, a Vaishnava never laments for death. Rather, he laments for birth. I thought that was interesting. From his uncle, don't lament for death, lament for birth. When you get born in this world, then that is lamentation. The letter instructed, so the soul is immortal, don't come to India now. You can offer worship to Lord Krishna for your departed mother there in America. Concentrate on your duty and don't waste time. Once born in this world, everyone is bound to die. So his uncle wrote him that letter, and he canceled his ticket. I got this from BDG. Okay, so now we'll read some more of the rest of the verses. Verse 57. My dear son, you have slept a long time. Now please get up. Your playmates are calling you to play. Since you must be very hungry, please get up and suck my breast and dissipate our lamentation. So which level of grief?
Denial.
She's still in denial now. She's telling the son, get up, come on, we're waiting for you. Please eat. Verse 58. My dear son, I am certainly most unfortunate, for I can no longer see your mild smiling. You have closed your eyes forever. I therefore conclude that you have been taken from this planet to another, from which you will now not return. My dear son, I can no longer hear your pleasing voice. So, which level has she?
Acceptance.
Finally, acceptance. There's some pain and sorrow there. She says, I'm unfortunate, I cannot see you. But she's getting down there, 6 and 7, pain and sorrow and acceptance, finally. So Shishigire Goswami continued, accompanied by his wife, who was thus lamenting for her dead son. King Chittaketu began crying loudly with an open mouth, being greatly aggrieved. As the king and queen lamented, all their male and female followers joined them in crying. Because of the sudden accident, all the citizens of the kingdom were almost unconscious. When the great sage Angira understood the king was almost dead in an ocean of lamentation, he went there with Narada Muni. So we'll stop here. Any questions? Yes?
56.
56. Right, that's right. The prophet says that also. In some purport somewhere. So the Brahmachari will go to Tapaloka.
What's the criteria?
What's that?
Criteria.
So what's the criteria for what?
One statement is that if I saw go to hell, and the other statement is that if I
saw
that a Brahmachari go.
Yeah, so that was what I read in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada explains that. That point, he says that if you are a devotee, you don't have any obligations to anyone. And just by being, I'll read that again. Let's see what here he says. Well, purport of first chapter, 41st verse. One who is engaged in devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Prabhupada says, simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. So that, again, of course, in 7th canto we'll hear that from Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad had this doubt as well, and he expressed it to Nrsimhadev. And Nrsimhadev said that all your forefathers, I think 21 generations, is it? 21 generations forward and backwards, they're all liberated. And so therefore, it's not necessary to get married and have a son if you're a devotee. If you're actually a devotee. Really, it shows?
Shows the real motivation
of the mother.
Of their son.
The relationship, they're thinking, oh, the son is for the shrad.
So actually, during the life, when the
Asian wants to. So during life, they say, yes, we want you to grow nicely, get your education.
Yeah, everything for you.
Everything for you.
This is very childhood.
Yes, but there is some business there.
But as soon as there's nothing for son.
Nothing for son, just the son should take care of the parents.
So same in Krishna consciousness, some children join Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Then
the parents, when the children become devotees, they're just lamenting the loss of their son and they're not happy that their children are happy. Okay, anything else? Yes?
Devarshi
Bhutapta. Inam Pichrinam. Yes. Yes, we surrender to Mukunda, we fulfill all the other debts. This was Prabhupada's point, yes?
What about if a devotee gets married, but the couple don't want to get children. For any reason, they don't want to get children.
So what happens if the devotees get married and don't want children? There are examples. I know three people that I know of who are like that. Got married, but they didn't have children. I know one lady, she got married on the condition they would not have children. And the other, one was from the lady side, one's from the... So her husband is a guru.
Did Prabhupada instruct about that?
He said it's okay. He said you can. He said, but generally grihastha life means children. He did not encourage it so much that you don't have children, but he said it's all right if you have the Krishna consciousness is your child. He said that's also all right. But when I see what is the result, and I think it's better if the grihasthas have children, when I see the result of the people who Especially when the wife gets old and then the husband wants to take sannyas, and then she's finished. She saw that on a very high level of Krishna consciousness. And then it's very difficult. Yeah, any other question? Manipur, you have a question? No? Okay. Yes. Chaitanya Chaitamrita, old couples don't have children. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing what? Oh, yes, yes. Actually, there was one example of a grihastha couple, and they had a son, 5 years old. And then the son died. And he was complaining to his deity, you know, now what am I going to do? My son died. Now who's going to do my shraddha? And the deity said, don't worry, I'll do it. And he's still doing it, that deity.
Oh, yeah.
Who is that?
Govinda Ghosh.
Govinda Ghosh. And they do that ceremony. The deity does the ceremony every year of his father. The deity goes and does the ceremony for his departed father. Actually, the deity travels. They take the deity out, or he just does it over there. Anyway, I don't know.
Similar, the example is there in
Kumbhakarnam.
One devotee is like a tower.
Okay, when Bhavshah, he built a...
He collected, he's busy with all these things, he didn't marry.
So he was too busy collecting for the temple and he didn't get married.
And Lord is personally doing.
So the Lord is personally doing his shot ceremony in South India, Kumbhakarnam. He goes somewhere with the Lord.
He's every year in Diwali day. He's Radha.
So he does the shot.
Yeah.
The Lord does the shot ceremony, yes.
Why? They need...
Yes. Yes. So his question is, and even the scientists say that, why, how come upstairs somebody can eat from downstairs? So why do they depend on our food? That is the question. Yes.
Practical thing, because if you don't have that...
He says it's practical. So if you don't have that set up, the father doesn't have to raise the children very nicely. So if he knows that he's dependent on his children after he leaves this world, as many Indian people feel, then he'll take good care of the child and Patri. Krishna performs shat ceremony for his devotees. Yeah. So he's saying, well, what's the point of the Lord performing the shat ceremony for his devotee? Because the devotee had actually the deity was just like a family member of that person, Govinda Ghosh. The deity was just like one of the kids. And so they had that very intimate relationship, the deity and he. And so therefore, the Lord, he continued that relationship even after. And he assured him, don't worry, I'll do your shraddha. And he had to keep his word. And the Lord...
preaching?
No, it's...
So people can see that how close it is.
Yeah, okay, one is preaching, but I would say it's a matter of relationship between the Lord and his devotee. It's a matter of love, that he loved his devotee, and this is what his devotee wanted. He was like, okay, you know, who's going to do my shraddha? You took my son away. And he said, don't worry, I'll do it. And so the Lord kept his word, and he showed his love for his devotee. Yes?
But devotee is not in the heaven, he's in the spiritual
world. He's in the spiritual world. So to whom does the shraddha go? Yeah, that's what Patri is pointing. Okay, so the devotee's in the spiritual world, so to whom does the shraddha go? If the devotee's in the spiritual world. That's the question. Yes. Madhavan
Prasad. His personal prasad is also the spiritual soul. It goes to the spiritual world.
So it goes all the way to the spiritual world. It's prasadam of Vishnu, so why not? And the devotee gets prasadam from the Lord, his the one he's attached to, his deity that he's very attached to, and he gets prasadam from his deity, Madhavan Puri.
He was in France.
88 in France. So you're collecting for New Mayapur.
Gold.
An adventure. So the head pujari volunteered to go to South America to get some gold.
And he got entangled.
He got entangled, of course.
Buying equipment and committed suicide.
He became so desperate he committed suicide.
So then
So Bhakti Charmuj Maharaj came a few months later.
One day we performed the shraddha ceremony.
So when do you perform the shraddha ceremony?
And all the pujaris, Maharaj also, they call the soul of...
So all the pujaris of Maharaj called the soul. So the soul came to Mayapur.
And
so they offered the pinda of Shishirada Govinda Madhava to him.
So the devotee was released.
Then the devotee was released and went back to Godhead.
He was
just suffering, yes.
And slowly getting entangled.
So Bhaktacharya Raj saw him and was communicating with him. So they offered the Mahaprasad plate to him. So that's, these things happen. It may happen to you. Don't think it won't happen. It shouldn't happen. No. No. Yes. Oh, I forgot. Prashanta. Trick of Lord Brahma to ensure procreation in the material world. Okay. Well, I don't know if he has to go that far. Oh yes, your mother died. You told me about that. Mm-hmm. So she couldn't. You couldn't burn the body.
So.
Yeah, right. They buried the body. Ganga water, flowers, chanting. So nobody wanted to sit next to the body.
I want to chant for her, how I will do.
You were thinking, how am I ever going to chant? All these relatives are here.
It was very easy.
Nobody wanted to be there.
Nobody. They would come in.
Look.
Sit in the other rooms.
They would sit in the other rooms. And you were just...
I chanted so many hours with the body.
Right, so you were chanting with the body.
And my godmother told me that... So I asked.
So he told you to bring something she's wearing or a part?
I took the Kantimala.
Kantimala.
Some other thing.
Some ornaments.
And I cut hair.
And you cut off some hair.
For many days I...
So you were feeling
even
this sorrow.
The knowledge is there and I was not in the same state.
Right. So your family members are going through all the other different stages.
Yeah, I wasn't like that. Right.
Yeah, you go to that person and then there's a void.
Yeah.
So you went to Keshigat with all the ornaments and hair. So you did puja to your mother?
Puja to
Prabhupada.
Then in the end,
so you thought about, you will keep the top of the box. So the godbrother says you have to put it in the water or it won't work.
And my experience was absolute, because she never became a devotee.
So you felt that your mother actually came to Vrindavan.
But I felt that she came to Vrindavan. She saw who I was, what I was doing.
She saw who you were, what you were doing.
She understood what I was doing.
And she understood.
She understood spiritual life, my heart.
And you felt a relief during this.
I never again gone.
So the pain was gone.
Yeah, and
Bhutra, yes. Okay, you still have something to say? January
97.
And your friend Bhakta?
Bhakta Paul.
Paul left his body in front of the deities in the temple.
So he had a heart deviation by birth and no.
He had a heart.
It was expected.
Yeah, it was expected. He had a heart problem since birth.
But,
so you were the one who had to phone the parents after he died. So they came very quickly to the stage of acceptance.
Because they were expecting. That
yeah, they weren't expecting him to live. Okay.
So I was just there and asked for that.
Yeah. So Bhagavatam is preparing us for that. Yeah. Teachings of Bhagavatam. So we accept it before it happens. But still, when it happens, just like all these devotees in Gita Nagari, they were all feeling when Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj left. They were feeling this, all these emotions. Yes. Oh, yes. So Pati is remembering when Tamal Krishna Maharaj left, and that was shocking.
Those who knew him and those who never knew him.
Those who knew him, those who never knew him.
So I was such emotion with Jagtak Maharaj.
So you were sitting there and suddenly somebody came and told something to Jagtak Maharaj.
And he was just accepted because...
He couldn't accept it.
It was just now, Maharaj just left.
Yeah, Maharaj just left. He went to go to Calcutta and...
And
sweet kirtans they were having every day.
And
they were insisting, telling him.
And then, whatever, shock.
And shock came.
And he immediately even break.
So he was chanting Gayatri.
Yeah, he was chanting Gayatri.
Oh, and then he stopped
then
chanting.
He
became angry.
How is it possible?
And when the devotees were informed, nobody could accept it. That's a more Krishna.
Especially
disciples. And so the devotees from China. And nobody was accepting. Everyone was in denial. And so even with us, these things we go through, as this Brajalila Mataji was explaining, that if we don't spiritualize our emotions, if we just repress them, then it won't help. We have to go through it in a proper way. With reference to Krishna and in the association of devotees. So it's quite interesting, this all this section here about what they go through, what the people go through when they lose a son, all these emotions, all these stages. Anything else? Otherwise, we had another discussion. We wanted to ask Adi Purush a question. Remember, anybody remember what question we wanted? You gave a Bhagavatam class once, and it was about accepting responsibility for your karma or something. Was that it? God is just
and kind.
Oh yes, I heard it on the radio. God is just and kind. So what was the point?
No, they have the opposite of like instead of accusing God.
Oh yeah, instead of accusing God, you should accept.
So put responsibility in order.
So we should accept responsibility. Do you remember anything you said?
Islam is strict. Lord Brahma says that that's the prerequisite for becoming a candidate for liberation.
A prerequisite for becoming a candidate for liberation is accepting responsibility for your karma.
Tatenu
kambam susumishimam. Prabhupada asked a question. What about when we're suffering? Oh yeah, yeah. There was something you said about why we should, if we think, we should, huh?
Yudhishthir
said?
Yaksha asked him, what's pride?
Oh yeah, he asked, what is, Yaksha asked Yudhishthir, what is pride?
So Yudhishthir said, pride is to think that I am suffering.
Pride is to think that I am suffering. So, think about that statement. That's, I remember, I heard that, I said, whoa. Pride means to think I am suffering. That's what I was trying to recall also. That's a good one, huh? Pride means to think I am suffering.
There's an underlying assumption of the spirit of the enjoyer.
Because the underlying assumption we have is that I am the enjoyer. So if we think I am suffering, that's a sign of pride. That we think that we're the enjoyer. That means we think we are the enjoyer. Okay. So. Oh boy. So you can all write that down in your notebooks. Yeah, I really think I'm suffering. So, got a big boil. Okay, so that's a sign of pride. Sankirtan. On the other hand,
Srila Prabhupada says, unless one has a pessimistic outlook on material life, meaning recognizing the suffering of material life, one has no impetus to make spiritual advancement.
Yeah, unless you have a pessimistic outlook on material life, there's no impetus for advancement.
So I take it more like I'm suffering. That is to say that I'm suffering in the sense of unjustified.
Yeah, unjustified suffering. Yeah, I think that's pride.
That's also right. I
so pride means that I'm suffering unjustified. I shouldn't be suffering.
Right, I haven't done anything wrong.
It's not fair. I haven't done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And why am I suffering? It should be somebody else, not me.
Krishna says, "Dukala, I am Shashvatam." It's a suffering place. So
you
recognize that.
Yeah, Krishna says, "Dukala, I am Shashvatam." And just brought to mind something that Bhakti Chitra Maharaj wrote. And he wrote his last book about dying, dying before you die. And he was, when he got the cancer, in one of the chapters, he wrote a whole letter to his cancer cells, thanking them and appreciating them.
Cancer
cells in the body. He got cancer. And he was saying, I know you also want to live, but I'm trying to kill you, you know. But I know you also are trying to struggle for existence and living. So he was like, really, some far out, yes.
There is spiritual suffering also. Some of the Vaishnavacharyas, you see, they're always expressing their feeling of suffering.
Okay, there is spiritual suffering, the sons of who?
The Acharyas, in their songs.
Oh, the songs of the Acharyas, yes, right. Spiritual suffering, separation from Krishna. And if you, and the solution is Kirtan and Srimad Bhagavatam, because that will satisfy, that will cure the disease, the material disease, and it will satisfy the pangs of separation of the great souls. So we have to take the medicine. The medicine is Harinam Sankirtan and Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Yes. Any more profound statements that we can add to our list? Yes. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.